Greetings and salutations, wonderful people, and welcome to Fumble Through!
Fumble Through!
A podcast that was born from an egg on a mountaintop. We're a group of friends who like to get together each week and pretend that we're cooler than we actually are. It's okay though, because the way that we roll dice brings us down pretty quickly. So join us as we explore the world of the Pathfinder role-playing game.
You can follow us on Fumble Through at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, or follow us on our newsletter at fumblethrough.com.
Fumble Through! I'm Justin, and I'll be the GM for this session. And joining me in the Fumble Factory are Lindsay!
Have you ever thought how unfair it is that giraffes exist in this world, but unicorns don't?
I do know.
What
I'm
do you mean?
I'm thinking that right now.
Well, a unicorn is just a horse with a horn, which is a lot more easier to comprehend than a giraffe.
Plenty of horses with horns, aren't there?
Brett!
Hi, Justin. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you.
Why are you calling my name out?
Well, it's your turn to tell us about... What was your day like?
I don't get up in the day. I just sleep through the day. No, I had a day... I don't want to talk about my day.
And that's why we play roleplay game. Luke!
Hey, how you going? I'd just like to say that there is no better kind of movie than a movie that's been made in the 80s.
Oh, I tried to watch Big Trouble in Little China on the weekend with the kids.
Careful.
Yeah, be very careful.
I couldn't find it.
Oh, right. I've got an English DVD. It won't work on your player unless you've got a multi-region player.
He only likes watching Malaysian versions.
I really wanted to share Big Trouble in Little China with my kids on the weekend.
You've seen it though, right?
I have.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I think my boys are at an age now where we're going to be doing lightning bolts at each other across the bit. Yeah.
Bloody storms.
When we were kids, we watched that movie
a lot.
We had that movie on VHS and we watched that movie a lot.
That one and Golden Child.
They Live. They Live and Blind Fury with Rutger Hauer.
To be fair, Blind Fury. What? Did you see Split Second? I think that might have been early 90s.
No.
What was the one where the guy got...
Remo?
Remo Above the Law?
No. That was Nico Above the Law with Steven Seagal.
Remo. I get Remo. Those two mixed up.
Yeah. And special guest star this week is A Sense of Adventure. Like many gaming groups, we have unfortunately dropped one of our members due to scheduling and personal commitments. While it's a shame that Mikey's no longer able to go on this ride with us, we wish him well and push on regardless. I mean, we'll still see him every week when we play our other game anyway.
Sure, well.
I've loved having you at the table. It's been really fun having him.
It has.
We'll miss him.
Or Frenchie.
As with every session, I like to lubricate our nerd minds with a question. If you have a question or a discussion topic that you would like to open the show, send it through to us at fumblethrough.com.
Fumblethrough!
Actually, put it on our Facebook or our Twitter account because that's probably where we'll read it better.
This week, I'd like to ask if you could have any fantasy pet, which one would it be and what impact do you think it would have on your life?
My life.
Oh, no.
I enjoyed that.
Oh, no, it's evolved.
Anyone?
I'm going to go blink dog.
Oh, a blink dog. Tell us about a blink dog for those people like Luke who don't know what a blink dog is.
It's
I'm
a dog
not woke.
That teleports a bit, just kind of like Nightcrawler.
Who's Nightcrawler? I'm joking. I am joking.
It's a problem when you have to say you're joking because we could believe it to be true.
Oh, my heart.
Oh, too close to the boom, mate. Too close.
I mean, it's one thing to not have emotion, but you start picking on comic books, we have a problem.
I just like the idea of the dog blinking into the neighbor's yard to do its shits and then coming back.
Wouldn't that be the worst aspect of a dog? Like, you could never harness that dog. You'd be going for a walk and boom, it's gone.
Yeah, but you can still train it, you know.
If it sticks around.
You train it well.
I'd probably go for Snarf from Thundercats.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Something that I can emotionally abuse and it's okay.
And I'm not sure that's a fantasy. Like,
how is it not a fantasy?
No, well, it's I think he's fiction. Having a fantasy.
Yeah. I said emotionally abused.
Mm. You need Snuffleupagus for that.
Oh, man. What about you, Justin?
I would love to have a pseudo dragon, like a little tiny dragon that could live in my house. Like, I often kind of think a cat would be a really cool pet. I have a cat, but a cat would be a really cool pet. If it had wings and then it could fly around. But the impact on your life for some of these creatures, the impact of having a cat that already does enough damage to my house that can also fly, That is absolutely insane to me, but how cool would it be? I guess there's a whole swathe of different animals that would be really great to have, but I wanted something small and manageable. I'm not a real pet guy anyway.
What about you, Brett?
I'd like a Night Fury.
I don't even know what that is.
From How I Trained a Dragon.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I do know what that is.
Yeah.
How do you think that would impact on your life on a day-to-day basis? I'd
get to work quicker.
It's true.
I don't think I'd need to get to work.
But you would lose a leg.
No, I don't need to be Hiccup and what's his name? I don't know the
dragon. Toothless.
I don't need to be those. I just want a Night Fury, like a full one, a proper one,
right.
Not a shitty one like Toothless. It's broken.
Ooh. Are doesn't you have saying a tail. That wrong, though? Isn't it pronounced a Night Furry?
I can get you one of them. I know a guy.
So I think I get to work faster. I don't think people would mess with me as much.
I have a question. I have a counter question for you. Oh. Why a Night Fury and not like a Pegasus?
Because a Night Fury can shoot things out of its mouth that kill people, and it's dangerous and it's cool and it goes fast and you can jump off the back of it. It'll save you before you splat on the ground. And have you ever seen one of the three awesome movies that have been put out about How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah, I just look in the Dungeons and Dragons world that I live in, the fantasy role-playing world, dragons aren't like that. They have hordes of gold. They kill people without remorse.
So you're wanting something more like a manticore then, really?
Oh, yeah, you're right. I want a real dragon with mounds of gold.
How would that impact your life then?
Yeah.
I know. I'm surprised no one said Sphinx.
Why did you hold your hands in front of your chest as if you have a pair of breasts when you said that?
They've got a beautiful voice, those sphinxes.
Excellent. Good job. All right. So last episode, we left the party in somewhat of a conundrum. Having entered this ancient ice-covered complex, you've overcome the obstacles presented in the first room, unfreezing Decath by putting the ring on his finger, destroying the animated ice statue. You recovered both halves of those keys that sort of fit together like the swords from He-Man. And then you entered the second room to find the second ice statue carved in a realistic delight. After Decath accidentally, and I say that in inverted commas, pushed the statue over, destroying it, the being within it got freed and the spirit cursed you all. In an explosion of cold, both Flopsy and Decath fell to the floor, and it's now up to Reg and Miles to figure out what to do next. I'd like to zone in on both Reggie and Miles in a room. You've got two of your friends lying on the floor. You know that one of them's, or at least both of them, I think, have been stabilized for what you can. What kind of healing or what are you going to do? Like, how do your characters deal with this?
Miles, after checking over both Decath and Flopsy, would be like, this is all I can do for the moment. We're just going to have to bunker down for the night and hopefully leave in the morning.
Does he look terminal?
As far as I can tell, I'm not a doctor. As far as I can tell, they're fine.
So Reggie just goes over to Flopsy and Decath and just kind of like checks them over a little bit and it's best he can kind of thing.
Do either of you have any healing skills? Do you have skills in the arts of healing?
They're multiplying at the minute. So I can roll a heal check, yeah.
You can?
Mm. Yeah, me too.
Okay.
So to, is that a cue? Well,
I mean, you I'll said check, you can. I'll check Actually, Flopsy. No, guys, don't want you to. No, if you so roll your heal checks, let's see what you can find out about these.
So I rolled 14 with my modifier, it gives me 16 on the heal.
Yes,
I rolled a 3. So if my modifier that gets me an 8,
outstanding.
That's rolls. A great modifier, though.
Yeah. That's a fabulous modifier.
It's just unfortunate the dice roll. Don't oh wait, back sorry, you up.
That was fly. That takes it to a 5.
You are pretty fly for
so
a
you
while.
You check to heal and flip to the ceiling.
Yeah.
Why are you checking to heal through my fly?
Oh, dear. I don't think flies are invented yet.
Reggie, you're looking over the two bodies. You're sitting there. You're doing what you can with the healing arts that you've got. You kind of look over Flopsy and you kind of, okay, you can feel a pulse. There's still blood there. There's life there. You get to Decath. There's nothing. Decath's gone. He's a lifeless corpse.
Miles. We've lost Frenchie.
What do you mean?
He's gone.
I swear I stabilized him just before. And he runs over and double checks and probably finds the same thing. And I swear we got to him in time. Maybe it was I cast the wrong spell. I don't really know what I'm doing.
So at this point, we've made that decision to hunker down and just see what the morning brings. So now we're going to have to establish a watch,
yeah,
and just hope that Flopsy's able to kind of bring himself back from the brink.
Yeah, I assume would be whoever's on watch would be standing by his side and trying to keep an eye on him for anything and try and...
Well, that would, yeah. So Reg, you know, I'll take the first watch then, boy, you get some rest.
Oh, I can't go to bed just yet. It's too much going on. This day, the last 3 days have been ridiculous. Like, from everything that's been going on, I've been driven out of my hometown and it's just, I've got all these new friends and it's just something I've never experienced before. You two seem like outcasts yourselves, and to accept me the way you have, it's quite heartwarming.
Well, boy, I've had a bit of a experience with being the outcast myself. Trouble never seems to be too far from where they were sort of flopsy, so don't take it too hard on yourself that we've run into a bit of strife, boy. Where Flopsy and I come from, we're not really considered, how can I put it, model citizens.
Well, I was, but it didn't help. I was just too different. My thing now is, what are we going to do if we're stuck down here? What do we do?
Well, I'm pretty sure if Flopsy's going to turn around and wake up, when he does, he'll figure something out. I've got all my faith in Flopsy. We need to make sure that he gets through the night and recovers.
He's a powerful wizard?
He's certainly a knowledgeable character. There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
As to the magic, I'm not so sure. It's not really my place.
Well, mine neither, but it looks like that's changing.
True. True. My experience with Flopsy is his magic tends to get us in as much trouble as it gets us out. Which is why I've stuck with him.
Thank you, Reggie. I'll try and get some rest. Wake me for second watch.
I will do. Rest up, boy.
You'll go and have a lay down.
And kind of hunker down into the room. I mean, the room's cold and it's still, I guess, the one good thing about Decath not being there is that you get to equip yourself finally, Miles.
Isn't it all frozen now?
He's a different size. He's just two sizes smaller than you. He's got smaller feet. He's a little shorter. Everything you put on is just a little bit too tiny.
Yeah. Take the gun, though.
I guess you guys find yourselves for the first time in this room having lost a character, and that's probably something that's a bit familiar to someone who grew up at a farm, but very different. Like, you guys didn't really know Decath that well, did you?
Mm.
It's yeah. I don't know what I'm trying to say there. So,
well, I guess really, like, in that circumstance, we'd be, like Miles has turned around and said, there's been a lot going on in the last couple of days. And I think really we would be probably running a little bit on autopilot, sort of.
The real question here is, have your characters experienced the loss of people around you, people you care about, people you've, I guess, adventured with or been with?
So Reggie hasn't experienced death as such, but certainly loss. His the person that took him in to train him in Jalmari, who he had built quite a strong relationship with over the time that he was with him, just disappeared.
So you guys are hunkering down. Did you say you're taking turns at watching over Flopsy?
Yeah, so yep. Reggie will take the first watch.
So are you guys tending to the body? Are you keeping, like, are you treating wounds through the night? Are you keeping him warm?
I'll be next. I'll be next.
Teabagging him.
Yeah, Miles will be sleeping and I'll be sitting next, keeping an eye on Flopsy, because I would want to do that anyway, because me and Flopsy are pretty close.
Right. So you start administering a bit of healing. In terms of a character and rules, that means that Flopsy will actually heal a little bit more because you have administered some healing for him, and you kind of do that for the 8-hour period that is until the morning. And you kind of, you know, you're wiping the wounds clean, you're trying to warm him up, you're trying to put him in, he's in a silver blanket, you know, you put him in a bubble, the ET's there and his finger warms up and he touches him.
We can use Decath's cloak, couldn't we? Yeah, I can use Decath's winter. He had a winter cloak, didn't he? Kind of thing that I can.
Yeah. And I guess you can find things on Decath, and it might be a good time for you, Miles, maybe to grab some stuff.
Unfortunately, you would probably have to go through Decath's stuff and get, because I don't even have like the general, a backpack or a bedroll or any of that kind of stuff. So I would probably go through Decath's stuff and unfortunately loot the poor fella.
Yeah. And I guess this is a game question, because it is one of those things when a party member dies that you've got to ask yourself, do you bury them with all their stuff? Do you take advantage of some of the equipment that they have? Is there a nice modicum in between that? Because there is that moment where in real life, you know, there are people who have things on them that they obviously want to be buried with, or maybe return to their families. So, what's our feeling on people passing in game, and what we do with their equipment?
Well, from my perspective in this scenario, I think being that Decath wanted to be a hero, I don't think he'd one have an issue with me taking his day-to-day living supplies to help myself, but I think he'd be want to be buried with his weapons. You know, the old Boromir on the boat with the sword kind of thing. So, yeah.
I think I'd probably, in this situation, be inclined to take an item that proof of the calf and bury him where we are, because there's a lot of wildlife around. You wouldn't want the body to get
eaten by a cat.
Yeah. Or some other animal kind of thing. And then obviously that's, you know, the location. Well, we would hope to know the location to pass that information on if ever we came in contact with somebody that knew him, and then use the item that we've taken as proof. But yeah, I think taking the weapons and stuff would be a pretty cold move. Mm.
Brett, what's your, I guess, in-game, your out of character, because role-playing a character right now is a very silent and...
It's an internal affair.
Yeah, it really is. So, what I mean, out of game, what's your thoughts on that? We've been adventuring for a while as friends.
Oh, there's a couple of schools of thought for me. One is, if I take all the gear, is the DM going to punish me for having too much gear now and not give us any treasure? And is it useful for me? The real school of thought is honoring the dead. It's what, you know, what should they be buried with? What is the thing that their custom says? So for an elven person, I'd want to know, like I'd be asking, what do we have to return his body with all of his things to his elvish parents? That's the thing we should set him up for. And if we can't do it now, well, let's intern his body here to come back for it to let his family know where to get it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess that's an age-old question. Depending on the groups that you play with, depending on the characters that make up that group, that can be a varied thing. There are definitely some trains of thought that say strip them of everything that's valuable, and as a GM, that can put you into a bit of a conundrum as well, because it changes the dynamics of a party. And then you have a new character come in that obviously has a starting gold as well, and if that character, you know,
it gets a bit OP sometimes, doesn't it?
It certainly can unbalance the game, or, you know, I guess it depends on the type of game that you're playing. So it's just something that I thought about. But
there's a question there about honouring the dead and what they should get buried with. And, you know, they might not get buried with the Wand of Cure Light Wounds, but they might get buried with their sword. Mm. Maybe they don't care about their backpack and their bedroll. And you've got to make some choices about what's important to the character and what's not. So
can't eat rations when you're dead.
Right. If we look at Decath, obviously his gun and his sword were very important to him. You probably want to leave that with his body.
Mm-hmm. And I guess the other part is, you know, the burial rites, but
his feet he didn't love.
So you guys are sitting there looking over Flopsy, just keeping him comfortable as he can. And you start noticing just at some point during this rest, he just starts to twitch a little bit. His body starts to move. You see parts of his eyes flicker open, and it looks like he's in a visceral kind of dream state, I guess is the best way to describe that.
So Reggie checks that, because he's obviously going to be worried that maybe there's a fever setting in or something like that, and you're saying that that's not the case.
No, he just, as you're there, it just seems something comes over the actual body.
Darkness. Absence. The void. No touch, no smell, no sound. This is the first thought Flopsy has when he rouses. Where is the tangible things that bind me to a place? Where is the sudden earth, the frozen mist, the tang of ozone? Where am I?
Welcome.
A deep voice, a voice of ages and wisdom and knowing and being. A voice both in front of him, at once out of nothingness.
The disorientation of being in the void has gotten to you, I see.
As two motes of light slowly manifest, as if from very far away, coming slowly closer, inexorably, certainly, dreadfully.
Rise, boy. Kneel before your betters. You are in the very presence of that which is what you aspire to. It is I, Tawil At-Umir. The very presence of the key and the gate manifest for all to behold. I am his word, his arm, and by my thought your very presence can be undone. Rise and bask in the presence of power that you one day wish to hold.
Flopsy sits, wipes his eyes, and searches for some very familiar thing, an anchor, not for his body, not for his mind or his soul, for without it, his very id seems to be dissipating in the darkness around him. He stares down to see what he is sitting on and for the first time notices tiny pricks of light peeking through the darkness, shards, twinkling, icy whiteness that are just enough to focus on to keep his mind and body intact, a gossamer fabric of light holding the darkness at bay.
Good. As I have seen, you have the capacity. Just having the strength to hold together in the void is enough to merit my respect. Well done, upstart.
Why are you here? Where am I? What do you want? And he says it. He notices a pattern in the sparkles of light. No, not sparkles. Stars.
I come to warn you. I've stepped out of the void, watching all things in places and all times, wanting for him to rouse. I hold his power until he returns to resume his rightful place. I have seen what has come and what is to be, and I've bent my will to visit you in this time and place to warn you, step away from this path. My mantle is too great, too powerful for you, and I shall not relinquish it. It is mine, taken from the weakness of he who was before me, and I shall not easily part with this power of the old gods. Heed my warning, Runt. Stop. Turn back. Quest no longer for this power of which is beyond you, for you shall not prevail. You shall not pass the threshold onto the arms of the old ones.
The motes of light reach closer, menacingly, and as they approach, long tentacles can be seen behind them. Behind that, more motes woven together with tentacles, a tapestry of dark, writhing, slithering appendages with iridescent orbs pulsing at the end of each of them. This large manifestation all sits outside the shards of light that Flopsy is placed upon. Tentacles probing, but not able to penetrate that curtain of stars that holds Flopsy aloft.
Yogg-Sothoth knows the gate! Yogg-Sothoth is the gate! Yogg-Sothoth is the key and the guardian of the gate! Past, present, future, all are one in Yogg-Sothoth. He knows where the old ones broke through of old, and where they shall break through again. He knows where they have trod Earth's fields, and where they still tread them, and why no one can behold them as they tread. I am he, and he is I, until his return. Step off, and follow no more, lest we wipe your very existence from this place and time, and all others.
Is this the void? And as he searches and probes, his mind notices a silhouette in the darkness in front of the tangle in front of him. A man, old, wizened, but still hale and strong, an arm outstretched seeking the light in front of him. The silhouette of a horned helm on his head and a whip trailing from his belt, stretching, searching, grasping for the light.
Enough! I tire of this. You have been warned. Heed my words and seek me no longer. Turn your back on Yogg-Sothoth, for should the day come to pass where we stand as equals, and the weft and warp of his tapestry, his presence shall be made known, and this world and all others shall bend to his will or be disturbed. Turn back, or I shall be forced to destroy you. None shall rouse the father of Cthulhu and Hastur and Vormir. His power is mine, and I shall not share it with another.
And at that moment, the shards of light that Flopsy is sitting on all flare into a luminescent canopy, blinding him and knocking him prone. And then nothing. Darkness. Absence. The void.
So you see Flopsy kind of writhe, stop. He sits there. You've been administering healing for most of the night. You've been tending his wounds, making sure that he's comfortable. Both of you have been doing a really good job of that, but mostly Reggie. I guess Reggie's got a connection with Flopsy that's a bit more. And then all of a sudden his eyes kind of flicker and open.
What? Get away. Oh, ouch.
Flopsy. Miles. He's awake.
Are you okay, Flopsy?
It's all relative, I guess. I'm better than I was 5 minutes ago, but not so good as I was a day ago, I guess. You've
been out for a night.
24 hours?
Pretty much, yeah. You had us worried there for a minute.
Well, it still hurts quite a bit. What happened?
Well, when the statue got smashed, some weird thing said we were cursed, and then it well, from where I was standing, it looked like it almost exploded in a puff of ice. It caught you and Dekarth.
Right, so we just need to rest up and heal, and then the four of us can get on our way.
Flopsy, we lost Dekarth.
How did you lose him? He was around here yesterday.
No, Flopsy, he's dead.
What do you mean dead?
He's right there. He's dead.
But surely we could heal him up or something.
We tried.
I tried. My pals just, they seemed to help you, but they didn't seem to help
you. But he can't. No. Father always at the temple would be able to bring people back. There was always healings that could get administered. This is
just a bit beyond us, Flopsy.
Perhaps there's a way to hold him here until someone who has the power to bring him back can come back and bring him back into the light. So, tell me, step by step, what happened while I...
Basically, Dekarth pushed the statue over, it shattered, we found the key, and as we were picking up the key, a spirit of some kind with tentacles and like an... It was like an old man with tentacles, and he said that would curse just all, and then explode, and ice shards went everywhere, and you and Dekarth copped the most of it. I was able to cast some magic, and I was able to stabilize you. Well, that's what Tippy said. He said, stabilize, cast. And then I tried and did the same on Dekarth, but it felt like the spell did the same thing, but nothing seemed to happen.
Oh, right. And a key? The statue?
Yes, there's a key. And then
hands well, show the me key. The key.
I hand the key to Flopsy.
Can I do a detect magic, inspect? What do I see in the key?
Just looks like a normal key.
Any
key
inscriptions?
No inscriptions, okay. No nothing. It looks very similar to that other key that you found that has of two halves.
I read a lot of books. I have a feeling it is that locked door behind us. But
right. Give me some moments to gather my thoughts. I've had quite the ordeal. And Flopsy's going to investigate the pieces of the statue. Did it explode like a huge shard of, like, it's in bits? There's no way to gather any more information out of it?
The statue hit the floor and just broke into pieces. So imagine like pushing over a stone statue, even though it's made of ice, or well, an ice statue.
Yeah, like pushing over an ice sculpture.
Yeah, that's right. It had just hit the floor and just whoosh.
Totally little bits. I can't read any of the inscriptions or anything come back to that.
No, okay. The whole thing is kind of destroyed. And even after, you know, being away, the dissipation of the spirit that was contained within has kind of made it melty and, you know, it's kind of dissipated.
I'm going to just have a look around the room and do a little search and see what I can see. Think what I can think, and then I'll come back to you.
Maybe I should try healing Dekarth again. It did work on you, I swear.
Give it a go, boy.
So he's going to go up to Dekarth, and he's going to get his hands ready, and he's going to like kind of like rub them together and go, Tippy, help me cast another spell. And he's going to lay his hands on one on Dekarth's head and one on his chest. Like, can Tippy help me? And he's going to concentrate really hard.
Light. And the body lights up.
With the explosion of light in the room.
Yes, thank you. That makes it much better to see. What are you doing over there?
I was just trying to heal him and didn't seem to work.
As you kind of, you know, over Dekarth's body, you can see that the frost that touched his finger, I guess where the frost actually hit him, is starting to spread. And you didn't notice it throughout the night, but you can see that cold is starting to move throughout his entire body. It emanates from the point where he would have touched the statue. The infusion of magic that you've just done and the light that shines through starts to actually push out a fog that emanates straight from his body, bubbling, roiling around him. Soon the fog kind of obscures all the vision in the room. It fills up the entire room with a light, an eerie light that comes from there, and it fills this very sanctuary. With a loud crack, the mist pauses, and it almost goes deathly still and then reverses direction. It sucks back in. And as you see it kind of moving and sucking back into a single spot, the mist retreats, revealing a frozen statue of Dekarth now standing exactly where that old statue was, his arm outstretched, his fingers splayed, and the look of horror on his face as he gazes at his own hand in much the way that the old statue looked like that. Almost surrounding the statue, like a spirit around the ice sculpture, you once again see that spirit. This time, a very different demeanor over his body. Still, that half-orc kind of sharp teeth, the tentacles that come out from his midsection, the eyeballs around the thighs, the tail with a bit of a mouth or a chomping maw at the end of it is sitting there. But his face this time is replaced by an almost serenity. And he says to you, you freed me even after your friend. He made the sacrifice. And with that, he smiles a gentle smile. My thanks, but also my commiserations. I am sorry for your loss of your friend, but I thank you. You seem to have rescued me from a fate that was worse than death.
Who are you?
My name is Odanbir Zodbin, and I was sent to this place by my master. That was many, many years ago. What year is it?
It is year 4711.
Odanbir.
Yes.
Is our friend dead?
I do not feel a presence within this statue. I do not think he is trapped in there. I think he's gone. I think his spirit has been freed, but he has replaced me sitting on here. 4711. I have been here for over 2,000 years. This is my life. Everybody I know is gone.
Odanbir, where is this place?
This place here. My master sent me here, my master Ral Zeros. He claimed that Beldren had stolen something very important. He believed that one of Beldren's servants, Shekar, might be better off out of the picture, and he sent me here to take care of it. I failed. I was captured. And this is where I am. Ral Zeros. He now lives with his treasures in the building made of stone as black as night, and I stay here as a statue, as a spirit. But now I am free. And I thank you. And I thank your friend. I cannot do much for him, but I can do this for you. He waves his hand and you see his spirit kind of fade out a little bit. He looks at each of you and you feel some kind of a chill, a tingle. And each of you are rewarded with an aid spell. Mm-hmm. A spell of aid. You've got AIDS.
You knew what I was going there. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You just. Good.
What does an AIDS spell do, Luke?
It gives you an immunodeficiency.
You feel a blessing come over you. The blessing itself bolsters you, and you see your own wounds knitting together as they heal. You see yourself mending. You watch Flopsy sort of start coming together, the bruises, the battle scars that all of you share start knitting together, and you start increasing in your health. So right now you're under the effects of what's a temporary hit point spell, aid. So you get to roll a d8.
4.
8.
2.
And you get to add 7 to that number. So you get to add those, and that's how many hit points 15. You now have above your maximum. That's so add those to the dice roll plus the 7, add that to your total hit points, and you feel like that, as well as a bit of a bolster for your own morale, a bolster that will actually help you, you get a +1 on attack rolls as long as you were within this complex, and you also get a +1 of saves versus fear.
Holy bejeevers. Just let me get this right. Flopsy's on 1 hit point. Mm-hmm. He's got a maximum of 6 hit points.
Yep.
This spell goes off.
Yep.
And right now, he's on 9 hit points because he got 15 more hit points. No.
He got healed first and then he got 15 more
hit points. He got healed and so he's on 21 hit points.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
He's on like...
So you're the frontline fighter now.
Yeah. You're 3 times his normal hit points.
Beefcake.
Yeah. Yep.
Got swole.
Yep. Even your tail's flopping around a bit.
Yeah, it now works.
Yeah.
We get the sense that the +1 morale bonus exists in the area that we're in, and we get that same sense within temporary hit points.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
Well,
right? So as long as you feel like it might be tied to this complex, yeah, to this sense, you know, there's a sense of revenge, I guess, that comes with it, that, you know, Odanbir was sent here by his master to complete a job. He never completed it. He wants revenge. He's bolstered you guys and given you a bit more oomph and power to try and complete the job that he doesn't. And as he kind of disappears, he says, seek revenge.
Wait, I've got a question.
Goodbye.
No.
I was going to say,
If you wanted Beldren's prize, it's Tippy. That's what it wrote out on the cage. It said Beldren's prize.
It did, yes, but...
He didn't obviously look very hard, did he?
He could have just told us a little bit more about the landscape, perhaps what that house was, where we are.
Let's not look a gift ghost in the mouth. He did just heal us and give us a shitload of extra points.
And true, true.
Does a morale bonus stack with a racial bonus?
Yes.
Yep. Just thought I'd double check that.
That's a rule that you should know.
I know. I didn't want to make an assumption. That was all. Like I said, I read these things. They don't stay.
It's all about bonus today with Reggie, isn't it?
It is.
That's all he did to Flopsy.
Yeah. So I guess the three of you are in this room. You now have, you're fully healed. You've got extra hit points. You feel a little more capable of moving forwards. I guess the one question that you've got is what do you just watched one of your friends turn into an ice statue. How are you going to deal with that?
Didn't know him that well. I'm joking.
He's hate the French. Flopsy will mark this place. He will come back. This is a quest that must be completed. Then there is a way to release Decath, perhaps into eternal rest, or perhaps bring him back. I don't know, but there is an expiration here. Side quest.
With that in mind, was there anything when we searched the body?
Miles is going to take the rapier that he had taken off him earlier when you're trying to heal him, and he's going to go, Reggie, will you help me kind of like implant this in the ground in front of him? And we can hang his gun on it.
Sure.
As a grave marker, even though his statue was here, we can have his, you know, weapon in front of him. In case he ever needs it again.
Sounds like a good idea.
Mighty respectful.
Can Reggie look through the belongings that are there? And is there anything that I can find that I think would be kind of like proof of the calf? And if we come across the family or something like that, somebody knows him, we say like, well, he's here. And here's the proof that we've met him, kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Like a crest or a family crest or something like that.
So as you're going through his backpack, you kind of rifle through and you do feel, you do find like a family crest that's in there. So there's like a little, I guess, like a book with some personal details that has a family crest.
I can put that within my belongings.
And I guess filled with a bit of renewed vigor after losing one of your teammates, being reduced in size as a group, what are you going to do? I guess this has both bolstered and saddened you at the same time. It's been a pretty traumatic. So what's the next steps?
Backwards.
Well, this certainly puts Reggie in a bit of a position because now he truly is, like, for the most part, the frontline fighter.
Mm-hmm. I do punch things.
Yes, you punch things. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. But your value is more at the back. No, but Reggie's thinking more like you're protecting Flopsy. If I'm moving forward, I don't want to leave Flopsy exposed. So you're the next kind of...
second stage of defense.
Yeah.
Well,
because I know Flopsy's, well, up until now, Flopsy's a piece of tissue paper. Hey. Well, we all are really, but even more so with Flopsy.
Well, I haven't tried casting any spells from a distance yet. It's all been hands-on touch. I don't know if I can do that or...
You got the touch!
So I guess right now you kind of grab yourselves, you bolster on. Are you heading through the door?
Which door?
Yes, there's a key and a door that we have not explored. There's also that fountain back there that made everything icy. I was going to go back and have a look and see if there was anything for Decath, but that seems to be moot now. Let's move on, shall we?
Let's do this. Let's go through the door.
I'm feeling great.
All right, so...
juiced up.
Who's actually going to be opening the door? Who's got the key? Who's got the secret?
I think I had the key, didn't I?
You say that with the certainty that's convinced me, Lindsay.
I've just woken up and it feels like my pack had been rifled through overnight.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've got all this other stuff now from the cast pack, and he's got books and paper, and because I don't have any bedroll or sleeping equipment.
Yes, good idea. Take his bedrolls. He would appreciate someone getting good use out of his things. He's got some rations in there, I think, too.
It's a bit weird elvish stuff, but it'll do.
Who's got the key and who's going through the door first?
I've got the key.
So you're opening the door?
Sure. Let's open the door.
Yep, trap goes off. Dead. You're all dead. Sorry, game over.
Okay, let's roll up.
Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. It's been lovely for you.
So you approach the door. The door still emanates with cold. As you take the key out and get closer to the door, you actually see the frost of the door dissipate the closer you get with the key. As you put the key closer, imagine like a wall of ice that just kind of recedes from the keyhole. It's like
hitting the demyth button on your windscreen.
Yeah, almost. That's right. So you demystify the door. The key goes straight into the door. You open it, click, and the door swings open, revealing a corridor that runs down. At the very end of this corridor, it's about 30 foot long. You can see another ornate door. You can also see that about 5 foot before that, there's a corridors that intersect into a T section. So you can walk up, you can go straight ahead if you would like into that door, or you could go left, or you could go right. But the main thing that you see right ahead of you is this door that stands right in front.
Just to get a bigger picture of the area we're in, is this stone iced over or is it carved from the ice?
It's stone iced over. So this is a complex that's obviously been here, but it looks like the frost, the permafrost is kind of a feature of it, if you will.
Okay.
Onwards, gentlemen, to the crossroads and see what you should see.
All right, so you move the 20 foot up to the crossroads. You've got a T intersection, left, right, and you go ahead. Again, the question of light. So who's got light on them? Who can see in the dark?
Dark vision.
Dark vision. One character's got dark vision. Two characters don't.
So I reach up and touch Tippy,
mm-hmm.
and Tippy goes, light cast, and starts glowing.
Yep. Definitely. So you've got some light coming from Tippy as it's been cast from him. You can either go forwards through a very ornate door or you can go left and right. Both of those corridors end and seem to curve around.
Where do we go, Flopsy?
We walk through the door in front of us.
All right. Let's do this.
You walk up to the door. Who's going to open it? Who's the person? What's the marching order right now?
Reggie's at the front.
Mm-hmm.
Flopsy's taking up the rear, in the middle.
Okay, excellent. So, Reggie, you going to open the door?
Sure.
Yeah, the door's just a giant stone. It's featureless almost.
Now, when you say giant.
Well, for Reggie.
Excuse me, sir.
Let's just be clear. Yeah. I would not have opened the door if it was a giant door.
Reginald, perhaps check if there is any untoward devices attached to those doors that might explode on you.
Sure, because that's the kind of thing I can do, right? Can I make a perception check on that?
On the door?
Yeah, does anything look dodgy?
Search it over? Sure, roll your dice.
16?
Fair enough. You start searching the door. You don't find any signs of anything other than a door in front of you.
No signs of a door?
No, anything.
it was here just a minute ago. Did you make a will save?
Your perception check failed so bad the door's gone.
I'm blind!
Yeah. Flopsy comes, turns you around.
Does it feel like, I give it a little testing shove, does it feel like I can actually move it open?
Yeah, you don't find anything other than the door as a normal door. Yeah, you can shove it open if you like.
Let's open it up then.
You open the door. The room opens up into a musty space with a vaulted ceiling. This narrow room, which would be roughly about 15 to 20 foot wide, is lined with bookcases. Two reading tables sit in the very middle of the room, and an armoire stands at the far end next to a four-armed, human-sized clockwork contraption that stands on three legs.
It would seem the adventure is over. I am done. Goodbye, gentlemen. This is where I shall stop. Look at this. It's magnificent. Books everywhere. Let's read and read and read.
I do like books.
I like books. Thanks for us, Grump.
Armoire
is a piece of furniture.
Oh, yeah.
It's a cupboard.
Oh,
yeah, it's a cupboard. Do you not know what an armoire is?
Why can you just fucking say cupboard if it's just a cupboard?
It's like it's English.
I'm doing this to honour Decath. It's a French word.
That's why I don't know it.
It's a French word.
I was going to say, you should probably know it more, but...
I should.
Yeah.
I should.
Yeah, so
as
you...
foreigner.
You stand in what really looks like a library to you, and you can see at the end of it the armoire or the cupboard, and there is a person that stands there, but the person's made of like clockwork,
like
things
Tippy.
Almost like looks like Tippy. You can see it's got four arms, it's human sized, it's got three legs, and there's a body that comes beyond it. It's kind of like a little spider on three legs, I guess.
Does it look functional?
It's just sitting there. It's standing there totally still at this point in time. The other main part of this room is that there is no frost in here. It's cool, but there's a rug on the floor. It's quite comfortable looking in here. There's none of that permafrost that seems to cover the rest of the complex.
So Reggie's going to walk up to the three-legged mechanical thing, mm-hmm. or approach it anyway, just to see what it's all about. Like, okay. Slowly, kind of like, you know.
You walk up, so you
walk, yeah, I'm walking towards it, like kind of like, yeah, just approaching it cautiously, yeah. Kind of just to see what it's about. It's
right at the other end of the room, yeah. So you would have to walk through. So imagine the room has library shelves, bookshelves that are on both sides of it. There's two tables in the middle that are designed, you know, you grab the book,
yeah.
Take it to the table, and yeah. You've got a little desk to sit at. It's right at the end of there.
Well, yeah, I'll slowly approach it. While the other two are clearly all struck with all the books that they can read, I'm obviously a bit more concerned that there's something there that potentially could be hazardous.
Sure.
Give it a little tap.
As soon as you do that, and you see it just start moving.
Jump back.
And it kind of says to you, Master Beldrin, what can I do? And it looks at you and, you are not Beldrin. What is the secret word?
Flopsy! Yes, books over here. Great, interesting. This is the history of Absalom.
What is the activation word, please? You are not Master Beldrin. What is the activation word?
Tippy, what's your activation word?
Tippy just looks at you, kind of, what?
Damn, it was worth a try.
Yeah. What is the activation word, please?
Perhaps you use him to hack into the mainframe.
The dark tapestry.
Incorrect. What is the activation word, please?
Beldrin.
Incorrect. What is the activation word, please?
Password.
Shakar.
Incorrect. Intruder alert. Intruder alert. And you can see at that point the legs that it's standing on kind of bolster up. Its forearms flare out. Not its forearms, but the forearms that it has on it flare out, and it looks like it is about to charge you, at which point...
I thought it was going all Popeye there for a second.
Yeah, it eats some spinach. No, its arms kind of flare out, and it looks like imminent battle, which we'll do next time we get together.
Let's do it.
Yeah. If you notice, Justin seems to feel very uncomfortable with feelings.
What were his vows like when he got married?
What is emotion? I actually said to my wife in my wedding speech, I love you like a fat kid loves cake. And that is a poster that is in my bedroom.
Little did you know that I would be that fat kid one day.